I'm kind of an oxymoron.
I am 80 years old, so this is all new to me.
I go, you do what?
I do FaceTime and Zoom, but I miss the hugs and kisses.
I'm Shoshana Buxbaum. This is Project Resilience. Over the next half hour, we'll be listening to people with disabilities and seniors across the state, listening to stories of how technology has shaped their lives during the pandemic, from getting hooked up to the internet for the first time to the hurdles and expanded opportunities of remote work. We'll be focusing on technology as a connector and its renewed importance during a time when in-person communication is more limited than ever. During the confusion and isolation of the early days of the pandemic, one man actually started to imagine a new life that he never thought was possible.
I was laying in my bed and I woke up, and once I opened my eyes and I started to blink, because you know when you're blinking and there's no light coming through.
Preston Parrish lost his vision suddenly in 2005. And while his vision had been a little hazy for about a year, this was a shock.
It was first disconcerting, where, you know, your whole world comes crashing down and you don't know what you're going to do. You're just like totally freaking out.
He lost his vision because of diabetes. His doctors thought they might be able to restore his vision. He had several procedures and a surgery to reattach his retinas, but it didn't work. He was also undergoing dialysis at the time, and his world became very small.
It was like I was in a bubble.
Preston went to dialysis 3 times a week. He made friends with a guy who sat next to him, and that friend kept trying to convince him to get services and start adjusting to his new life, but Preston wasn't ready.
I shined him on and told him, no, I don't want to do it, because I was feeling self-pity.
It took him 15 years, but finally, a few months before the pandemic, Preston reached out for services. A technician from the state's Division of Services for the Blind and Visually Impaired came to his house. He helped Preston set up a screen reader for his computer. It's called JAWS.
JAWS will tell you exactly what you're doing. So you really don't need your eyes, all you need are your fingers.
The tech also told Preston about all of the programs the center offered. Classes on things like Braille, navigating with a cane, woodworking, how to do household chores.
And I couldn't believe all of the stuff that was going on and how fluent and efficient he was. He was just as blind as I was.
In fact, all of the techs from the division are blind.
It's so critical for blind individuals to be teaching other blind individuals. When you actually have blind instructors like myself and others going out, then you know, it becomes more real.
That's Everett Bacon. He manages the team of specialists who go into blind people's homes across the state. And it's not just about helping people set up their tech. It's about showing newly blind people what's possible. Everett's been completely blind for about 10 years now.
I cook, I grill, I manage the house, pay bills, do all the things that anybody else does with sight, but I just do it a little different way.
Once the pandemic started, the center was closed, and service techs weren't going into people's homes. They still had one-on-one virtual sessions, but they also started hosting daily Zoom meetings.
It was like every day I would look forward to it. I would just go down and find a nice, comfortable place, and then wait until 1 o'clock before the Zoom classes started.
They talked about tech troubleshooting, sure, but for Preston, it was about a lot more than that.
I'm asking questions that I thought I would never ask anyone, like, have you ever been out of the country? Of course I've been out of the country. I've been to Germany, to Mexico, and my jaw's like dropping. You're blind and you went out of the country.
But the fact that Preston couldn't actually go do any of these new things right away, well, that didn't get him down.
So, you know how people are saying that they don't know what they're going to do, having to stay inside and And for so long without doing anything, yeah, I've already adjusted to that.
And now he's making his home work for him. Preston's in the process of transforming his house into a smart home. It's the little things that make a big difference.
I used to leave my TV on because whatever program was on, I would know what time it was. And now all I have to do is just, you know, hey, Google, what time is it?
And it was connecting with other blind people, even remotely, that made him understand what's possible.
If you have communications with other blind people, then, you know, one person with information could open the eyes of many.
Bacon says that for newly blind people, accepting that their lives will be different is the hardest part.
As much as technology is a wonderful thing, until you kind of come to that emotional understanding and acceptance, all that technology is just wasted.
That was Everett Bacon from Salt Lake City and Preston Parrish from Layton. Kelly Holt is a speaker with the Advocates as Leaders Speakers Network. Before the pandemic, she traveled across the state of Utah to educate others about the experiences of people with disabilities. Now, she's adapted to presenting remotely.
I was born with a traumatic brain injury. During the presentation online, it's harder for me, and I don't feel as connected to the audience, and I don't think my message comes across as well or as calmly, and it is harder for people to understand me. I miss traveling and seeing people. I feel lonely, and I do FaceTime and Zoom with family and friends, but I miss the hugs and kisses. If I didn't have technology, I know my life will be very boring.
That was Kelly Holt from Price, a speaker with the Advocates as Leaders Speakers Network. For some people with disabilities, that transition to remote work may even open up new employment opportunities that weren't accessible before. But that rapid shift to a virtual office has also created some new challenges. Hello. This seems to be a lot better with headphones, actually. So,
okay.
Yeah, and captions are populating okay. You can, like,
yeah,
understand me and everything.
Yeah, I just, like, it just takes me a minute to, like, if I don't have captions, man, it takes me a while, and I have to, like, read lips, and it's a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I feel so stupid because we literally had this whole conversation about how, like, Zoom doesn't have built-in captions, and then I was like, oh, here, like, let's do a Zoom.
It's okay. It happens all the time.
So I'm using Google Meet for my interview with Katie Lynn Adams-Anderton. It's got built-in captions. That's key for Katie Lynn because she has auditory processing disorder and also has hearing loss. Now that virtual meetings are the norm, Zoom has become ubiquitous.
So the biggest challenge is, like, Zoom does not offer captions readily available. Most of the time, organizations have to either pay or, the worst of all things, you have to have someone there typing for you. So, like,
and by typing for you, she doesn't mean professional closed captioning. She means a generous coworker furiously trying to type what everyone's saying in real time. And since we spoke, Zoom has rolled out live captioning for some types of accounts, and there are also free professional captioning services that you can add on to Zoom. But the problem is that most people don't even think about it.
I think it's genuinely, like, just a forgetfulness of just, like, how wide spectrum people need captions, because, like, I'm not deaf. And so I think a lot of times people think because I can mildly hear, I should be able to like understand mostly. And it's like, no, that's not how this works.
In elementary school, Katie Lynn had severe ear infections. She had several surgeries and got tubes put in her ears. She didn't hear at all from first through third grade.
Because I didn't hear through those very important times, I don't hear correctly.
She had surgery to graft a new eardrum to repair the damage from the infections, and she did eventually regain some of her hearing, but she continues to experience the symptoms of auditory processing disorder.
When people are talking at times, if I can't comprehend what they're saying, it basically sounds like the Peanuts parents, the muffledness, and I have no idea what's going on.
Katie Lynn has been hesitant to disclose her disability and ask for accommodations, especially at work.
Sometimes people will think sometimes less of me because I'm having to have these conversations. It becomes like this like weight of like, is it worth it? Is it worth it to say something and say, I need captions?
Sachin Pabithran is executive director of the United States Access Board. He says that it's common for people with disabilities to face workplace discrimination.
There's this ideology that people with disabilities are not as productive.
But it's the stigma around asking for tech accommodations that's actually making Katie Lynn less productive, since she's constantly looking for time-consuming workarounds. She's the vice president for compliance for a background screening company. She recently went to a virtual work conference and there weren't any captions.
So I rewatched the conference 2 to 3 times per session just so that I could capture it all.
If she were in person, she could have asked the person next to her if she didn't catch something, or she would have gone up to the presenter afterwards. That's a lot harder on Zoom when everyone disappears the instant the meeting is over. And while remote work has created new challenges for Katie Lynn, for many people with disabilities, remote work might actually expand employment opportunities. Here's Sachin Pabithran from the United States Access Board.
These are platforms, you know, people with disabilities have been advocating for a long time. Now, suddenly, when everyone else kind of got forced to use this platform, all of a sudden it's like, wow, this is amazing. We should do this.
Sachin is blind, and he's thrilled that remote meetings are now the norm. He acknowledges that his job is more accommodating than most, but going to in-person meetings was a logistical challenge for him, a combination of taking publicly funded shuttles that ran infrequently and shelling out for an Uber to his final location.
I've got to meetings, and I'm standing in the hallway for like a, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes, because there's really not a place for me to sit and wait. It's hard to explore when you're a blind person, when you're by yourself.
Transportation remains one of the biggest barriers to employment, says Sachin. In Utah, just under 50% of people with disabilities have jobs at all. That's according to census data from 2018. And now that employers have been forced to adapt to remote work, there may be a lasting impact.
I think because the mindset is shifting, there's going to be more opportunities for people with disabilities to apply for jobs that they might have not considered to apply for.
But it's still too early to know if there'll be a permanent change. But Katie Lynn hopes that this moment might provide an opening for people with disabilities to be part of the conversation.
I feel like at times these decisions are being made by people who don't understand what like the other side of the coin is like. And so I just think it's important to get members of this specific community who might be affected and just be able to help them in a way that's beneficial, you know, so everyone has equal opportunity.
Despite there being a multitude of ways to connect virtually, technology still can't quite replicate that energy of being together physically, especially when it comes to faith. Here's Amber Orvin.
My disability that I'm born with is atrodactyly, atrodermal dysplasia, bilateral clefting, cleft lip, and palate. Or for short, name of it is EEC. I'm born and raised in the LDS church. I'm the primary secretary and Mint Singles ward representative in my ward. I haven't done any of my church callings because of COVID-19. Before it closed down, I was a volunteer as a cashier in the temple serving others. It was the highlight of my whole week. Not being able to together as ward members and hug each other or see each other face to face is hard. That was my happy place, and it still is, even if I can't go right now.
That was Amber Orvin from Hurricane Utah. She's also a speaker with the Advocates as Speakers Network. Missing that in-person connection has in many ways been the most challenging part of the pandemic. And for agencies that provide services to people with disabilities, they've been working hard to get people connected virtually. One organization even helped connect some people to the internet for the very first time.
I am 80 years old, so this is all new to me.
Before the pandemic, did you ever think that you'd be on Zoom and doing all this stuff?
Never. I've never thought this would ever happen.
Nita Budo lives in Price, Utah. She attends virtual programs run by Active Reentry, an organization that provides services for people with disabilities living independently in the eastern part of the state. It's mostly rural areas. Chris Haycock is Active Reentry's community integration and youth coordinator.
I never once thought that we would be using Zoom to provide services at all.
But within 2 weeks after some counties issued stay-at-home orders in mid-March, Chris had a slate of virtual programs up and running. Support groups for kids and adults, cooking classes, virtual visits to museums, zoos, and even to the U.S. Capitol. But there was one issue. Many of their clients couldn't even get online.
Our big focus was to find those consumers that didn't have anything right then and there.
Active Reentry purchased 24 tablets to give to their clients, and they've connected about a half dozen to the internet so far. The money came from the CARES Act. The next step? Training folks on how to use their new tech. Here's Nita again.
We had a program to where we were on the tablet, and they showed us how to go through everything too. But you know what? When your mind can't hold all this information, you've got to do it more than once.
And Chris and his team were there to guide her through the process.
And I think this is probably why I enjoy the tablet, because if somebody didn't have patience with you, then you would not want to participate.
Chris was even there to help Nita get connected for our interview via Zoom.
Come up and you'll just hit the blue one, it'll say yes. So do you want to practice that really quick?
I do.
Okay, so I will just go ahead and mute you.
And it's important for people with disabilities to remain connected to their peers, says Chris. Nita's a widow and she lives alone.
If you're not connected to other people, then I says you can go into depression or feel loneliness and such like that. So I says, this is a good program to be on.
Arvin Hansen also just got on the internet for the very first time. He was born with a cognitive disability, and he's been going to active reentry programs for the past 20 years, but they're not quite the same virtually.
This is better than nothing, per se, I guess. Better than nothing. Because I'm kind of a social person, and that's what's been hard on the whole thing. Is that you can't interact with people like you should. I'm probably not the only one, probably not. Mainly, before all this happened, we used to get together, and that's the main part of the program. You meet friends for life.
Arvin and Chris first met 12 years ago,
when Chris first started working for Active Reentry.
In the very beginning, I started calling him CRISPR Columbus. That's the nickname.
Why is that his nickname?
I don't know, it just came to me.
And it just stuck. Chris and Arvin have become close over the years, and it's like that for most of Chris's other clients too.
We're their support system, and a lot of them, you know, they probably view us as family, you know? They feel comfortable. We've had that connection with them for years.
Arvin's not sure if he'll keep using the internet after the pandemic is over. As for Nita, she's hooked. She loves the cooking classes that Active Reentry offers, and that got her looking online for some new recipes.
I started into this plant-based food. I was looking at soups, and I was looking how to make rice. It was a lot of fun to thumb through it.
And she's even thinking about buying a smartphone to do video calls with her children and grandchildren. And if she does, Chris will be there to help her set it up. Technology doesn't have to mean something fancy or new, or even high-tech. Jordan Snell is interested in machines that we often take for granted. Well, until they're not working, that is. He's studying technology and engineering education at Utah State University. And he also has a side business.
So I fix lawnmowers, leaf blowers, weed eaters, snow blowers this time of year. I'm kind of an oxymoron. I have cerebral palsy. I have terrible dexterity. But I love nothing more than working with my hands and figuring out how things work and why they're not working. So because of the pandemic, I only did a few jobs this summer for established clients. It was quite the financial hit over the summer. So my wife also has cerebral palsy. She's actually a quadriplegic, meaning she's in a power wheelchair. And that's the other reason I've had to be careful is because of her quadriplegia. She's at a much higher risk for complications if she did get COVID-19. Back when I was single and it was just me, I'd probably say whatever. If I get it, I get it. But if she gets it, it wouldn't be good.
That was Jordan Snell from Logan. Back in late March, a group of women in their 70s decided to take their knitting group online. It was a seamless transition. Well, mostly.
I totally lost your invitation. It was like,
well, so here's a little secret, Cheryl. This is what Zoom calls a recurring meeting. The number never changes.
Now I can see everybody. There's Mariana. Hi, Mariana.
Oh, hi. You know what? This is probably everybody who's coming. Good.
This is Catherine Sharpstein. How did you become the the Zoom organizer?
Hostess with the mostest.
Her writing group had already moved online, and she realized that Zoom was really easy to use. And it helped that she decided to invest in a premium Zoom account with no limit on the length of meetings.
And then I just sent out an email and I said, hey, I'm hosting this week and I'm not going to clean my house, but, you know, come anyway.
It's not quite the same, but you know the difference between canned music and live music. If you are in the room with the music, it enters your body in a different way.
This is Cheryl Hart, a retired singer and one of the group's longtime members. A small but significant difference about meeting virtually?
We have to bring our own snacks and eat them here and we don't get to share them because everybody is a really good cook and people bring really good, like honest, good, true snacks, not just junk.
Karen Hamilton was the one who originally started the group about 8 years ago after she retired from teaching.
I've always wanted to know how to knit. And I said, that is one of my goals when I retire. I want to learn how to knit. And I thought the best way to do it is start a knitting group and then they can teach me.
Do you view yourself as like the organizer here, the glue?
Not at all. No, No, what I do is, like, I'm one of those instigators. I get things started and then I pull back and just let it go.
And she really did just let it go. You don't even have to know how to knit to be part of the group. All handcrafts are welcome, crocheting, embroidery. And when Catherine Sharpstein first joined the group, she wasn't crafting per se. She was using the time with the group to sort her husband's baseball card collection.
He had gone into the nursing home and those cards had to go somewhere.
Her husband had dementia, and the group helped her through it as she watched him slip away. And then they supported her when he died about 2 years ago.
For me, talking is really, really makes a big difference. If something upsetting has happened to me, I want to talk about it. I think all of us at one time or another have sort of told our life story to the group. And that's really cathartic, and, you know, it really creates bonds.
The group is a support system for the women to navigate a new phase in their lives. Here's Cheryl again.
When you are younger and you have a family to deal with and jobs, you don't, I didn't have a cohesive female component to my life. I mean, I had friends and we did things with them, but it wasn't the continuity that I have with these people just wasn't there.
And the conversation is lively too. Cheryl often brings a quote for the group to discuss.
So William Seward says, "There was always just enough virtue in this republic to save it. Sometimes none to spare."
Yep. That's for sure.
Isn't that amazing?
When the pandemic started, Catherine Sharpstein knew that she needed to find a way for the conversation and the relationships to continue. They needed each other more than ever during the pandemic. The group now meets every week instead of every other.
I didn't realize how long this would go on, but I realized that there would be a psychological need for people to keep in touch.
The group's always been about more than helping each other troubleshoot their projects, but now it's even more so. Here's Karen again.
I mean, most of the time now, we don't even know what each other's working on. Sometimes we'll say, "Well, what are you working on?" And they'll hold it up. But typically it's more about "good to see you."
And "good to see you" tends to morph into talk about COVID.
"We're really scared of this. My husband and I are very, very afraid. And yeah, some other people in the group are too, because in the knitting group, because they have reason to, you know, most of us have compromising medical stuff. So it is a big deal."
Cheryl's husband, Steve, recently recovered from renal carcinoma. She has asthma. If she contracts the virus, she's worried that she'll die.
So I internalize the stress. Being able to meet with my friends on Zoom lessens that anxiety.
And right now, there's a lot to be anxious about.
So what can you do? You can despair. You can say, "I can't control anything. This is horrible. I'm just going to sit in my chair. I'm never going to do anything." Or you can take care of the people immediately around you.
Thanks for listening. I'm Shoshana Bucksbaum. This has been a special about how people with disabilities and seniors have been using technology to stay connected during the pandemic. A special thanks to Chris Stoker and Amy Notwell at the Speakers as Advocates Network, Matt Wappet and Jo Lynn Lyons at the Center for Persons with Disabilities at Utah State University, Marla Neef, Program Coordinator for the Up to 3 program, Terry Yelonick, Executive Director of Active Reentry, and Linda Edelman from the University of Utah. Music by Emily A. Sprague.